This episode of Food for Thought is brought to you by the listeners of this podcast. That means you. You can show your support for this podcast by becoming a patron. You can go to joyfulvegan.com or you can go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoodrow, or you can just click on the links in the show notes and choose the level that's right for you. Thank you so much in advance. Today's episode is All Hallows Eve, Halloween, and vegan plant-based food traditions. Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goodrow, and I am your host. You can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, joyfulvegan.com. Welcome, everyone. So you should know this about me if you don't already know. Once I say something, once I decide something, it's as good as done. And in the last episode I did about black cats and Halloween, the history behind the superstition, I promised you, or I teased you with the potential of doing an episode on all of the plant-based foods that are celebrated or made during the celebration of Halloween as they relate specifically to the Christian tradition, the Christian history of this holiday, which also is related to Samhain. And it's also related to especially Ireland, because Ireland is this wonderful, in terms of the traditions around this time of year, it's a wonderful combination of kind of the ancient Celtic pagan traditions as well as the Christian, i.e. Catholic traditions. And so I talked about that. And so here I am. Now, I want you to know that you're going to start seeing some subscription-only, subscriber-only episodes, or at least some that are only for subscribers, and some episodes that will be released early for subscribers. And this was going to be one of them, but because I didn't want to waste any time and I wanted you to have this information, I'm releasing this to everybody all at once right away. But please consider becoming a subscriber either through Apple Podcasts subscription, which is very, very affordable, or through Patreon. Either way, you will not find interruptions during this episode of sponsors advertising their wares. So I'm just sending out a plea to you to please consider becoming a sponsor, becoming a subscriber, becoming a supporter, making sure you renew if you already are, and potentially increasing if you're able to do a few more dollars a month. Also, just a plea to encourage you to go leave a positive rating and review over, especially at Apple Podcasts. So let's talk about this idea. So since the time of the primitive Christian church, major feasts such as Christmas and Easter called for Christians to abstain from especially meat during certain times of the year, particularly on feast days, sometimes dairy and eggs as well. Feast days, also known as Christian holy days, are special observances within the Christian calendar that commemorate significant events or significant figures in the Christian faith. And these feasts provide an opportunity for worship, for reflection, for celebration. And while there are numerous Christian feasts throughout the year, not going to name everyone, some of the most prominent ones you would be familiar with are Christmas, which obviously is December 25th, celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ, who's the central figure of Christianity. And then you have Advent prior to Christmas, which is 4 weeks before Christmas. You have Easter. The date varies in terms of Easter because it's usually counted 46 days from Lent. And this commemorates the resurrection of Jesus from the dead and signifying victory over sin and life over death, etc. And so Lent is the period before Easter, Advent is the period before Christmas. And relevant to our discussion today, not a lot of people think about this because we're a much more secular society now, but Halloween and this time of year is really tied up also with Christian and prior to that pagan commemorations of the dead. And so in the Christian calendar, it would be All Saints Day, which is November 1st, which honors all saints and martyrs who lived exemplary lives of faith. And then you have All Souls Day, which is November 2nd, and that's a day of remembrance for the souls in purgatory. So if you didn't grow up Catholic, you might not know what that means, and it might sound very strange to you. I grew up Catholic, so this was a thing in this particular religion that I grew up in. And so purgatory is this kind of holding place. You could be in purgatory for a year, you could be there for 5 years, you could be there for eternity or almost eternity. And the idea was to be able to eventually get to heaven, eventually get to paradise. But for different reasons, we won't go into here. Some people were in purgatory for lengths of time before they were able to get to heaven. And so the idea of All Souls Day, which is November 2nd, was to pray for those souls to kind of speed their way to heaven. And so you've heard me talk in the past about how during these holy days, these feast days, abstinence from meat was often required. And I do have a podcast episode I encourage you to listen to. It's just a really interesting history, especially as it relates to food and as it relates to veganism or plant-based eating, or just, you know, at least the celebration of plants. The episode is called Forbidden Meat, Fasting and Abstinence During Advent. And I've talked about the same related to Lent, in that there was this requirement. And, you know, a lot less has been asked of people than centuries ago, even probably a century ago. You know, when I was growing up in the 70s, I grew up Catholic, and we did not abstain from meat at all. not at all. But we were asked to on Fridays. And so Fridays was a day where you would be asked to abstain from, I'm going to just say, land animals, because obviously animals were still consumed. Meat, in my opinion, fish is still meat. But we were able to have fish, but we were asked to not have land animals. And so it's got this really interesting history. And I actually am going to do an episode on fish and the relationship between fish and and Christianity and the Catholic Church in particular, and why I think there's a relationship between fish and religion, Western Christian religion, and people thinking that fish kind of don't count as animals. There's a lot to say about that, and I do think there's a kind of a line you can draw from different religions, not just Christianity, to be honest, but other religions as well, between fish being considered, I don't think people consider fish plants, but let's just say sub-animals. So they're not quite considered animals, and they're certainly not considered meat in that sense. And so I've talked about this in other contexts, but today I want to talk about abstinence from meat as it relates to All Saints Day, All Souls Day. And actually this time that I discussed in the Black Cats episode is considered All Hallowtide. So All Saints Day is November 1st, All Souls Day is November 2nd, and the evening before All Saints Day is All Hallows Eve, which is how we get our word and our now secular, pretty much secular holiday, Halloween. Now, the 3 days, as I said, are collectively referred to as All Hallowtide, and this is a time for honoring the saints and praying for the recently departed souls who have yet to reach heaven. But it's also the time historically when, as you know, historians would say, this was a liminal time. This was a time when it was believed that the dead could, you know, kind of come to the living. And there was this break between the living and the dead. Now, All Saints Day was originally introduced in the Christian calendar in the year 609, okay? And it was originally a spring holiday, holy day, which is what the word holiday comes from. And so in 835, I mentioned this in the Black Cats episode, it was changed to November 1st, and this was at the behest of Pope Gregory IV. Now, there are several reasons for this. I know that there's a real knee-jerk reaction to say that, oh, it was just trying to subsume Samhain, and that's why these Christian holidays came to just subsume all of the pagan holidays. Not necessarily, but again, that's another conversation. But there was also, there may have been some practical reasons for it, that Rome in summer couldn't accommodate the great number of pilgrims who flocked to it because of public public health considerations, especially in the warmer weather in Rome. That wasn't very different hundreds of years ago. But it's likelier that, in keeping with nature, the days grow shorter this time of year in the fall. The nights grow longer. There's a natural shift towards the end of the growing season and the onset of winter that's coming, which is a poignant period to commemorate the dead, because you have this time, this season, when the earth undergoes a transformation, right? And there's this all you have to do is look out your window to see this symbolism, this very obvious symbolism of life cycle from birth to death to rebirth. It's very apparent. So it wasn't only the pagans who would have seen this. It would have been the Christians. It would have been any human being who lived to see the deepening shadows and the contemplative atmosphere that autumn invites us into, right? To reflect on the impermanence of life and to remember those who have passed away and hopefully find solace and meaning in the midst of this changing light and the coming darkness. And so for hundreds of years now, in the Christian calendar, All Hallows Eve has been celebrated, and celebrated on November 1st. Now, to prepare for this sacred time, many Western Christian denominations historically encouraged, and some still do, the practice of abstinence from meat on All Hallows Eve. This abstinence, as the abstinence before any major feast day, served as a way to remember and honor the departed, but really it was an act of spiritual devotion. It was an act of self-discipline. It was a means of connecting with the deeper themes of mortality and remembrance, which is why I think it's really very telling that I think we don't have the memory. We might have the muscle memory, but we don't have this memory. And I think we have the muscle memory, which is why I think people will look to vegetarianism, veganism, whatever you want to call it, abstaining from animal products, as a noble act, as I would say a holy act. And that's why I think there's a lot of people who say they're vegetarian, but they're not really, because they aspire to be, and they see it as something lofty, and they see it as something noble, and they see it as something worth attaining, worth aspiring to. And because, you know, you don't have, you know, in most religions, you don't have periods of, let's say, decadence. You don't have a call for periods of just gluttony, right? When we're talking about kind of reaching a holier state, a higher state, it's usually related to abstaining from animal products. So I think there's something really interesting there. And you can see that certainly in many religions, certainly in Christianity. And as we discussed in Lent leading up to Easter, in Advent leading up to Christmas, and during this time of all Hallowtide. And so you have a lot of the food traditions rooted in this time, especially from Ireland, because it has such deep roots in both the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain as well as with Christianity. I mean, you've got both in Ireland, and which is so wonderful. I think it's one of the reasons I'm really drawn to Irish folklore and Irish history and Irish food traditions. And it's my people are Irish. I know I talk a lot about Italy and my Italian roots, but my roots, especially in terms of what I grew up with, they're Irish. I didn't grow up in an Italian family. I grew up in an Irish family, though I do have Italian roots as well. The family I grew up in, the roots I have ancestrally, but also culturally, that I grew up in were Irish. And so I'm very drawn to it. I've always been drawn to Yeats poetry and folklore and stories of fairies. And I think it's one of the reasons this time of year is just really magical to me. I have many, many fond memories of being in Ireland and the UK, because the UK and Scotland and Ireland have a lot of links from the past. There's just something really magical about this time of year, and I feel a real connection to it. And when it comes to the food, a lot of this comes from both the Celtic festivals of Samhain, but also from the Christian festivals. And so this is kind of, this resonates with me, let's just say. And so when we talk about the food, one of the first things we have to talk about, we can't not talk about, are the soul cakes. So the custom of baking and sharing soul cakes goes back a long way. We don't have a lot of evidence that it was part of Samhain. We have a lot of evidence as it being part of Christianity, but the idea of offering food to the souls who would have come to light this time of year, but even just specifically thinking of the dead and praying for souls and praying for people in purgatory, soul cakes were a kind of physical manifestation of that and something you can actually consume, right? And so this idea of giving out soul cakes, it during All Hallowtide especially, has been suggested as the precursor to trick-or-treating. There's no one direct line from any of the current secular traditions we have today and their prehistoric roots or even their Christian roots, but there is definitely evidence that it at least shares something similar, which is where in souling, it's called souling, this door-to-door practice of going from door to door during All Hallowtide, collecting soul cakes, it was called souling. And so you had groups of poor people, often children, who would go door to door, and they would promise to pray for the souls of the people whose houses they were at, and in exchange they were given these soul cakes, right? So that's one of the things you would see. You would also see Christians in some parts of the world visiting graveyards. They would pray. They would place flowers and candles on the graves of their loved ones. By the end of the 5th century, because they were high holy days by then, they would be praying for the souls in purgatory. They'd be ringing church bells for the souls in purgatory. And they would also leave soul cakes on the graves. Now, today, soul cakes, I think there's lots of fancied up recipes. I don't think you're going to find, I mean, you could probably find some traditional recipes, probably pretty bland, but today lots of people kind of fancy them up with sugar, also saffron and other spices to make them more flavorful. But you can make some soul cakes today, and they're very basic, flour, water. You're going to find a lot with eggs, but you certainly don't need them and didn't need them then when they were kind of made hundreds of years ago. Because again, when you're thinking of food that would have been made for holy days, for feast days, they would not have had animal products because, again, the church was asking them to not consume meat, but also animal products. You'll see that in Advent especially. I mean, I kind of argue that, you know, I would say certainly during the 16th century, where, you know, the majority of especially in medieval England, Europe, the majority of people were peasants. I mean, like 80, 90% of the population there were peasants. They were not eating animal products every day. I would argue, I mean, they wouldn't have used the word vegan, and I'm really cautious about using the word vegan in that context, but they were not eating animal products. If people had chickens, they would eat their eggs. You know, they had cows, they would milk and drink their milk. But for the most part, these were very simple people who were eating very simple foods. And so soul cakes is an example of that. They would have been flour. It would have been water. It would have been maybe some spices if they had any at all, probably some butter, especially if they had a cow and they were able to make butter. So they were very simple. But the point is, these were not rich, enriched. That's what we talk about when we talk about enriched dough. They weren't rich doughs. They weren't made with eggs and butter and milk. They were very simple. And so you can make soul cakes today. But if you do want to make them flavorful, and I would encourage you to do so, you can find recipes online for soul cakes. But that's one example of something that we can really draw a line from, you know, historical sources to today, in terms of a food that is very much plant-based, very much something we can replicate today, and very much in the tradition of abstaining from animal products. Now, you have another traditional food, and again, it goes back to Ireland especially, and that's something called barmbrack. So barmbrack is a traditional Irish fruitcake served during the All Hallowtide period, which includes Halloween and All Saints Day and All Souls Day. Sometimes barmbrack would also be served on New Year's Eve. And you can find, I mean, obviously it's so delicious, you can eat this any time of year. But even today, traditionally, it is often eaten around this time of year, and families would gather to enjoy this delicious fruitcake. So it's basically a fruitcake. And, you know, like all fruitcakes, there's a million different recipes, but some fruitcakes are yeast-based, which makes them a bit more bready, and some fruitcakes are not yeast-based, and so it makes them a bit more cakey. So it's really a matter of taste and preference and whatever you prefer. But Barmbrack's origins do trace back to the Celtic festival of Samhain, which marked the end of the harvest, the beginning of winter, right? Celebrating this idea of kind of transitioning to a new season, to a different season, to a darker season. And it's also been celebrated in the Christian tradition as well. So the Halloween brack, as it would be called, brack being just kind of the shortened nickname for Barmbrack. It was typically made with raisins and other dried fruits. It's delicious. It's like, again, any kind of typical fruit cake. It's light, it's sweet. And it would often, and I think this goes back beyond maybe even people in this generation today, but it goes back hundreds of years to where you would also bake objects within the bread. This is kind of similar to the king cake custom during the Epiphany. I talk about this in the Advent episode, where you bake within the bread or the cake some kind of object that kind of turns the consumption of this cake or bread into kind of a fortune telling game. And so you could put in a pea, a stick, a piece of cloth, a coin, a ring, a bean. And the idea is that when that item is discovered in a slice, it holds meaning for the person who found it. So the pea would signify that the person wouldn't marry that year. The stick could potentially indicate an unhappy marriage or a dispute. A piece of cloth could foretell bad luck or poverty. Obviously, a coin would mean good fortune or wealth. A ring could mean that there's going to be a wedding. A bean would suggest a future without wealth. I mean, so it all varies, but that would be the idea when you bake the Barmbrack. And you could also decorate the top with depictions of animals or birds. So I am going to be making this for Halloween, and I have a recipe at joyfulvegan.com. Maybe you'll make one as well. Very simple, really delicious. In Ireland also, and among immigrants in Canada, Irish immigrants in Canada, there was a custom to make on this meatless day, on All Hallows Day, especially on All Hallows Eve, something called Colcannon. We've talked about Colcannon when we've talked about St. Patrick's Day traditions. And instead of meat, people would often consume pancakes. So boxty is something I've talked about before. I actually have recipes for boxty as part of my St. Patrick's Day on-demand cooking class at joyfulvegan.com. But there was also a traditional dish called Colcannon, which refers specifically to mashed potatoes with some kind of green mixed in. Traditionally, it was cabbage, but kale is used these days. They're all part of the same family. And you would often season it with butter, and you obviously can just use plant-based butter. So it's total comfort food. I'm also making this for Halloween, and I've done so the last couple of years. So it's really very simple. It's very much making mashed potatoes and then combining it with some greens, some braised greens. You can saute the greens. You can do whatever you like. And I do have a recipe for Colcannon over at joyfulvegan.com. You can also add spring onions like scallions. You can add leeks. You can add onions. You can add chives. And you can, like I said, use any kind of green. You can use kale. You can use collard greens. You can use cabbage, whatever you like. And because it just reminds me of kind of the cucina povera that I've talked about a lot in the Italian tradition, but it's kind of the same thing with the Colcannon in the Irish tradition. It's very cost effective. It's very simple. It's not meat. It's year round, but it is especially celebrated in the fall and winter, and Halloween is one of those times when Colcannon would be served. Now, this again might be going back to something you'd have to pull out of your memory if you grew up Irish. Maybe your grandparents, maybe your grandmother made Colcannon, but it also has the history of tucking into that mashed potato, the mashed potatoes, and either the coins or the stick or a pea, etc. And so the same idea that that was attributed to the Barmbrack. You could do with the Colcannon. You can hide something to be, you know, kind of this element of divination when you're consuming the Colcannon. And it's mashed potatoes. It's pretty awesome. It's pretty amazing. Now, another plant-based tradition you would find historically that carries into today would be pumpkin-based dishes. I mean, this isn't a leap. This isn't a stretch. You could imagine this is, again, the harvest this time of year. You're harvesting pumpkins. You're harvesting apples. We're going to talk about apples in a little bit. And mostly in Ireland and Scotland and parts of England, and any of you who are listening who are from those areas, you would probably have grown up or remember hearing stories about your family growing up carving not pumpkins, but turnips or swedes, as they would be called in the UK, which is really difficult. If you've ever tried to carve a turnip, it is incredibly difficult, like carving faces into the, it's just really difficult. But that would be the tradition, especially grotesque or scary ones. And it served the dual purpose of illuminating the way during the dark nights, but also frightening away evil spirits. And these carved turnips are supposed to be the precursors to the modern day jack-o'-lantern. And so Irish and Scottish immigrants who came to North America used the native pumpkin, which is softer, much easier to carve than a turnip. And so we still have that tradition today in the New World, in North America, of carving pumpkins. It's recorded as early as the 19th century, but again, it was, you know, associated with the harvest because that's what you would grow this time of year. And so you have your pumpkin pies and your pumpkin-based recipes, synonymous with especially autumn, but also Halloween. And also, it's a plant-based option, so you're not consuming animal products. The other food we just mentioned that was part of the harvest this time of year, so it seems very obvious, are apples. Now, you can make lots of different recipes with apples, but of course, when we think of Halloween, what do we think of? Toffee apples or caramel apples, candy apples. I grew up eating all of them. I can't believe I still have teeth. I'm just amazed I still have teeth. I'm amazed I still have teeth, especially having eaten candy apples, which is really hard to do. Have you had candy apples? Like, it's hard. And this is obviously before I was vegan. I haven't made candy apples since I've been vegan. So the last 24 years, I haven't made any candy apples. But I have made caramel apples. They're pretty good. I still really like caramel apples. And so you would have candy apples, caramel apples, especially in North America, common Halloween treats. You would roll whole apples. You can still do this in the sticky sugar syrup. And I have recipes for wonderful caramel if you'd like it. Again, joyfulvegan.com. And then you can sometimes roll them in nuts afterwards. And so, you know, it's so sad because I am not someone who wants to buy all of the crappy candy for Halloween trick-or-treaters. Now, you already know that I live 100 feet up from the street. So people always ask me if trick-or-treaters actually come up to the house. If we made it enticing enough and if we had really amazing treats, they probably would come more. We've been here 11 years and we probably could have really made an awesome reputation for ourselves, you know, having like incredible treats, making it worth coming up our steps. The parents never come up. The kids still do. And I feel bad because I know I'm supposed to have like some incredible booty by the time they get up here, but I don't like buying all that crap. And it's not because I'm opposed to sugar and it's not because I'm opposed to treats. It's that I don't want all the packaging. I don't want all the wrapping. A lot of the treats are not vegan. They have animal products in them. A lot do. I know I can get vegan Halloween treats. Not a problem. But I don't want all the packaging. And I don't want it to just be one more crappy thing they just have in their Halloween bag. So I am inclined to bake things and make things and make caramel popcorn or, you know, or baked goods. And I've done that. Now it depends on the year and it depends on whether I want to go downstairs and wait for trick-or-treaters, right? So, and it depends on if we're home, obviously. But it also goes back to this horrific tradition, rumor, urban myth, whatever you want to call it, that when people handed out apples, there were razor blades in them. And so this, it was never proven to be true. Like there was no evidence of those things actually happening. And so it was, or at least they were very, very, very rare, and they did not result in deaths or any serious injury. But that myth has just, it's still around. It just persists. And it's really sad because then there's this whole fear of, you know, giving something that's homemade to a child and that they're just going to be thrown out. So I don't know. Sometimes I just turn off my lights and I don't have the kids come up at all because I'm still in a quandary about it. And I haven't decided what I want to do about it. So here we are this year and it's just a couple days away. And I don't have any treats. I want to make caramel popcorn. That's what I want to do. Caramel corn. Put them in little bags. Will they be thrown out? I guess. It's going to be a lot of work for me on my part, but I'll probably still do it just because I can't help myself. So this idea of, like, people used to hand out candy apples and caramel apples, but because of that, of those myths and those rumors, people really stopped doing that. And it's really a shame. So all of these things are related to both this kind of historical thread we can trace all the way back to early Christianity, certainly Samhain, certainly kind of early Celtic traditions. We also have a lot of games. There are actually quite a few games. This time of year was, and parties were, especially in Victorian times, was a time for people to get together and again use this as an opportunity to divine the future. And so a lot of plant-based foods at Halloween parties were used to determine whether you were going to get married or not. And so you have a lot of these traditions. There's a lot of them. You can go find them online. Just search for Victorian Halloween games. And a lot of them had to do with, like, walnuts. You put the walnut in the fire. And if, I don't know, if one sparked and popped, that means you were going to get married. If it didn't, that means you weren't going to get married. And, like, I mean, just all of these kind of ridiculous things. Same thing with, like, peeling an apple. If you would peel the apple and the peel would stay intact the whole time you were peeling it, that means you were going to get married. And if it didn't, you weren't. And some of it had to do with, like, what the if there was, you would peel it and then, like, throw it down on the ground and whatever letter it resembled would indicate whether you were going to get married to a person whose name started with that letter. So, I mean, you can try these things. But of course, we also have apple bobbing, which I will say I did grow up apple bobbing. My mother, I attribute all of my crazy entertaining, crazy hosting obsessions, which, by the way, we just had a Halloween party. It's my husband's birthday on October 27th. So we always have Halloween birthday parties. And it was fantastic. We just had it. You can go to Instagram if you want to see some photos from all of our friends who dress up and take this all, well, very seriously, but very playfully is really the point. And we had just another fabulous event. Now, my mother would host parties all the time. I wish she were alive so I could thank her slash blame her because I'm the same way. And when I was growing up, we lived in a neighborhood where we were friends with everybody in the neighborhood and we would have neighborhood parties and we always had apple bobbing. Now, today I wouldn't really do that, I don't think, because I don't want to get my hair wet when, like, I'm already dressed up and I don't think anybody wants to do that. But that would be a tradition that can, it goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. Obviously, that means, like, putting apples in, you know, water and then people have to kind of use their teeth to remove an apple. There's also games, again, going back hundreds of years in this tradition, where you would hold a fork, I think, in your teeth and you would have to kind of, so it was probably similar to the bobbing where you'd have to, like, jab the apple with your fork to be able to pull it out. You'd also have things where in Scotland there was something called duiken where you would have a large basin of water and also remove the apples. But you would also have a game where you had treacle or syrup, scones, like a syrup coated scone hanging by strings, and you would have to tie your hands behind your back and then try and eat them while they remained on the string. So you'd have this, like, really sticky face. So all this is plant-based. All of this is a celebration of plants and the harvest and seasonal foods. And then, of course, today we have pumpkin carving contests. People still do that today. And I will say that if you're going to do a pumpkin carving contest, or even if it's not a contest, if you want to keep it zero waste, try to buy sugar pumpkins that you know you're going to use again for baking, to make, like, a pumpkin pie or something. And don't carve that pumpkin until the night before or the night of Halloween, so they're not sitting out there rotting, because then you can just use them after Halloween night. Because how long are you going to keep those jack-o'-lanterns sitting outside after Halloween? You're not. You're going to kind of toss them. So don't toss them. Compost them if you're not going to bake with them, but don't carve them until the night of Halloween or the night before, so that you can actually use that flesh for pies. So if you want a recipe for barmbrack, which is the fruitcake, the Irish fruitcake, and if you want the recipe for Colcannon, go to joyfulvegan.com. You can find a recipe for each of those. I'm going to be making those, so maybe let me know if you're going to be making those as well. Let me know what you think. And even though the religious significance of Halloween, I think it's definitely waned for most people, but you can see the tradition of celebrating plant-based foods during this time of year, during the autumn, during All Hallows Eve, during All Hallowtide. It reminds us of the connection between culture and spirituality and the changing of the seasons and the harvest. And it's a celebration of history and the culinary delights of this season. So I hope you appreciate the beauty of these traditions and continue them and celebrate plants. Whatever you're baking, whatever you're making, whatever you're cooking, whether it's for yourself, for your family, for a party, I think you can find probably more authentically plant-based cuisine, plant-based foods, a plant-based spread certainly reflects the harvest a lot more than any animal products would. So enjoy. Let me know what you make this time of year. And again, please consider becoming a supporter of this podcast by going to joyfulvegan.com. Thanks, everyone, for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thanks for listening.